This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents When Katie Met Cassidy by Camille Perry. Read for you by Allison Ryan. Chapter 1. Katie left the stale pile of her pajamas behind her like a cow pie on the bathroom floor and put herself into the shower. Morning routines would continue, she thought as she washed her hair for the first time in days. Oral hygiene would carry on. Brush, rinse, spit. Once in a while, floss. A whitening strip if you're really feeling dazzling. These were the days of our lives for as long as we lived until we died. Alone. Wrapped in a towel, she fished through the maze of cardboard boxes littering the floor of her one-bedroom West Village apartment until she found the one containing her work clothes. She pulled out the black Dior skirt suit that she always wore to closings, which would require a great deal of effort to de-wrinkle. Now where was her steamer? With each box she searched through, Katie felt herself becoming more hysterical until the truth was undeniable. Paul Michael had forgotten to pack it. Or, correction, he had forgotten to direct whomever he'd hired to box up her things to pack it. Unless he left it out on purpose. He was always borrowing her steamer, even though it was carnation pink and only cost $20, and he could have easily bought himself one in black or gray. "I'm going to buy you your own steamer," she'd once said to him while standing in the doorway to the bathroom, with her blouse at her side, waiting for him to finish smoothing out the final creases in his chinos. "Nah," he said, "no sense in having more than one." Wearing a suit with Sharpay-sized wrinkles to her meeting was unacceptable, but what was Katie supposed to do? There was a little bit of steam still in the bathroom, so she shuttled everything in there. She hung her jacket, blouse, and skirt from the shower curtain rod, and then sat on the edge of the tub with all of it swinging over her like a hanged woman. Today's closing was with a group of lawyers representing Falcon Capital. Falcon fucking Capital. Hedge funds loved to give themselves names that implemented intimidating animals, names like Lion Management or Tiger Fund. Katie swore if she ever started a fund, she'd go against type with something like Lemur Partners or Sleeping Sloth LLC. Or, in homage to her home state's favorite backyard game, Cornhole Capital. You'd think someone might appreciate the humor in naming a fund as such. But Katie's experience so far was that finance guys, and most of them were guys, lacked a sense of humor. They were too busy counting their money. And their lawyers were even worse because the lawyers were the ones who had to do all the arguing on their clients' behalf. In other words, it was safe to assume no one in the boardroom today would even crack a smile if Katie explained that she was sorry but her suit was rumpled because her life had imploded over the weekend, and her ex-fiancé refused to give up custody of the one item she'd ever bought on HSN that meant shit to her. When Katie finally arrived at Falcon Capital's office building, she checked her watch to see exactly how late she was, but she'd forgotten her watch, so she only checked her bare wrist. Inside, she was met with a vast reception area, jam-packed with the most massive crowd of suits and ties anyone had ever seen outside of Grand Central Terminal or the Republican National Convention, all of them waiting for the next elevator. Katie heard one of the suits say mechanical malfunction, and she understood this to mean that her day was not about to get any easier. She trudged directly to the receptionist desk, where a preppy young man had a phone in the crook of his shoulder against one ear, and a Bluetooth earpiece in the other. He held his pointer finger up to her to say, "One moment." Katie mouthed the words, "I'm looking for the stairs," but he paid her no attention. She went so far as to mime walking up steps, but he still ignored her. Just then, a slickly dressed man in a trim suit bulldozed up to the desk, knocked on it with his knuckles, and demanded, "The stairs, where are they?" The receptionist looked right up and pointed to an unassuming door on the opposite side of the room. The guy was off without so much as a thank you. Katie jogged after him, benefiting from his complete lack of politeness when it came to forging a path through the crowd, and praying her 3-inch Dior heels would not let her wipe out. She lost sight of him on the stairwell, but when he threw open the door to Falcon Capital's floor, she realized they were going to the same place. Katie entered the boardroom just a few steps behind him to find everyone else already seated. A line of old white men and young white men, various bald and balding heads of innumerable ages. There were handshakes all around. "Cassidy Price," he of the trim suit and shiny dark hair said. His handshake was firm, but his skin was soft. Katie looked straight into his deep-set brown eyes, as one should do when giving a professional handshake, and only then did it hit her. Cassidy Price was a she. Katie was thrown and embarrassed, and thankful, too, that she hadn't put her foot in her mouth. It would have been just like her to crack some joke about being the only female in the room and have everyone avert their eyes and pretend they hadn't heard her. Ms. Price and Katie sat directly across from each other near the center of the conference table, and everyone got down to business.
"What's your first comment to Section 1?
The baldy at the head of the table, who was also Katie's boss, said, and the meeting proceeded from there like all these meetings did.
"Okay, let's discuss... What's next? Section 2A. Okay, what's your issue there?" And so on.
Katie was struck by Ms. Price's arrogance, her brashness, the way she reveled in uttering the phrase, "Falcon cannot agree to that," as if it were a command. While she argued the preposterousness of their every position, Katie tried to imagine her life. She looked to be about Katie's age. Was she wearing any makeup? Katie couldn't tell for sure. If not, she had enviable skin. And what sort of product did she use in her hair? Clay? Putty? Pomade? It had such texture and volume, and an expensive cut, no doubt. She had to be a lesbian, which, after the weekend Katie had, seemed so much easier than being straight. For the more comfortable clothes alone, her black suit fit her perfectly, but it was clearly not a woman's suit. Ditto on the blue button-down dress shirt she wore with it.
"Falcon can absolutely not agree to that," Counselor Price said.
It was no wonder Katie had mistaken her for a man earlier. Mannish was clearly the look she was going for, and her voice was deep and brusque enough that it could go either way.
"Walk us through the issue you have here,"
Katie's boss said. The Falcon businessmen, and even the other older, more experienced Falcon lawyers, let Ms. Price do the walking through for them, because who could stop her? As she went on, Katie wondered how someone like her had gotten this far looking the way she did, in a field where the dress code was so strict and deeply entrenched that if you wore the wrong shade of stockings, you might as well have stayed home. Katie remembered her law school advisor explaining this to her before she went on her first job interview. "You absolutely must wear a skirt suit," her advisor had said. "No pants. It may be the 21st century, but big law is stuck somewhere around 1955. So how had Cassidy Price managed to jump the divide into the far more simplified dress code for men? She was polished. Katie would give her that, and her suits must have been bespoke, but still. If it were 1955, Ms. Price would have been thrown into the back of a paddy wagon and carted off to jail for this outfit.
"Do you agree with me on this?"
Katie's boss asked. He was asking her specifically.
"Yes," Katie said. "I do, absolutely."
Miss Price echoed her previous sentiments by stating,
"Falcon cannot agree to that."
This time, with no idea from where, Katie came back at her with the perfect legalese as to why they would stand firm on this point. Miss Price would not stagger. She remained entirely unfazed, but said for the first time all morning,
"I think Falcon might be able to agree to that."
Then she deferred to her boss, and he said,
"Great. Moving on, then."
Ha, Katie thought. Yes. And was that a slight grin she caught flashing across Counselor Price's face? She had a decent smile, good clean teeth, a model's bone structure.
She would make an attractive woman if she'd grow her hair out and change into a more feminine suit like Katie's. A suit designed for a woman, with breast darts and no pockets, and an absurdly low-cut neckline like God intended it. The meeting with Falcon Capital broke for the night an hour or two past what a civilian would call dinner time. They'd have to reconvene the next day, but for now, Katie was free. Except that freedom was just another word for walking around in circles when you'd just been dumped by your fiancé. Katie stared at her phone, alone among the frenetic tide of businessmen rushing every which way from the Falcon building, off to their nighttime, non-work lives. Her first instinct had been to text Paul Michael, but then she remembered there was no more Paul Michael, not in her life, anyway. So what now? Should she just go home? Cook something? It had been a long, difficult day, the kind she'd normally have used as an excuse to meet Paul Michael at Le Coucou or Chouco, and reward herself with her favorite bottle of French wine or masterfully prepared omakase. Or she would call Amy and invite her for a girls' night out at Otto, where they'd share pizza and pasta, followed by the banana copetta. It shouldn't have felt sad to go to any of those places alone, but it did. Maybe because it was the first night, or maybe because Paul Michael and Amy were likely at one of those places right now, together, toasting to their new love with Katie's favorite wine, or nibbling romantically on each other's omakase. Katie considered her takeout options. Within the hour, she was in her pajamas on her sofa, licking barbecue sauce from her fingers, sipping a pint of cheap bourbon, and flipping the channels, looking for some bad TV to watch. If someone had told her a week ago that she would be sitting here now in this dusty, stale apartment that she hadn't lived in for 2 years, eating and drinking her pain, surrounded by unpacked cardboard boxes, she wouldn't have believed it. She wouldn't have believed that the man she planned to marry could betray her the way he had either, or that he could spring it on her the way he did, just before they were supposed to head out to the Hamptons to celebrate Labor Day weekend with Lincoln and Lillian. So maybe she wasn't such a great judge of what was or wasn't believable, possible, or waiting just around the corner to clobber her into oblivion. 3 straight days of binge drinking later, not leaving the apartment until work this morning, and here she was, a living, breathing before photo for an antidepressant ad. When would it stop? Katie put down her chicken wing. This comfort food wasn't bringing her much comfort at all. What would Sheryl Sandberg say if she saw Katie now, or that woman who did the TED talk about power posing? Surely they'd tell her to get the heck up. They'd say, wipe your damn face, put on the sexiest dress in your closet and the hottest fuck-me pumps you own, and go make some new friends. Katie hadn't come this far in life to give up now, to sink down beneath a blanket of soiled paper napkins, clutching a remote control that was sticky with barbecue sauce. She was strong. She was a modern woman who knew the power of posing like Wonder Woman before leaving the house each day. She needed to act like it, and for tonight, acting like it meant Katie would have to go out alone. There was that new wine bar she'd been meaning to check out. It had probably been open for more than a year now, but she still hadn't been there because Paul Michael always said it looked too hip, or not hip enough. One of those. She couldn't remember which. Katie scrubbed the barbecue sauce from her face, shook out her hair, slipped on her best low-cut black dress and her highest, sluttiest heels, and out the door she went. Chapter 2. Even though Cassidy didn't get in till 2 a.m., she set her alarm for 6 so she could put in an hour at the gym before making it to the Falcon Capital offices by 9. The late nights and early mornings were becoming more difficult since she'd turned 30, but she refused to slow down. Instead, she worked and played and hit the gym harder than ever, heedful of each, her job, her sex life, and her bodily fitness, with equal energy and attention. She stepped out of her taxi at West 57th Street on Tuesday morning, as pleased by her rowdy Labor Day weekend as she was by her morning's fitness achievements. Now she was ready to work. Work today would entail the first round of deal-making on behalf of her firm's hedge fund client, Falcon Capital. A bunch of swinging dicks with shit for brains as far as Cassidy was concerned, but she'd still give them her all. She arrived at the negotiating table uncharacteristically tardy, thanks to a broken shuttle elevator. But she was relieved to hear someone arriving just behind her. A woman, no doubt, on account of the accompanying click-clack of high heels. And Cassidy thought, yes, because women were so much easier to intimidate than men. But then she turned to look at her. The girl was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, beautiful, in a way that made Cassidy feel exposed, like a spotlight had appeared overhead. They shook hands, and for a split second, Cassidy thought she noticed something in the girl's expression change, an element of surprise. Had Cassidy's own expression given her away? The male lawyers in the room, among them Cassidy's senior partner, a balding, middle-aged man who clearly had not seen the inside of a gym in a while, and her office nemesis, Hamlin Ludsthorpe, appeared to suffer no such self-consciousness on account of this Katie Daniels. Because brightening at the sight of a beautiful woman was their birthright. It was what they were supposed to do. Just as it was natural for Ms. Daniels to acknowledge and deflect them without a second thought. Only Cassidy was stuck somewhere in between, somewhere undefined and embarrassing. Everyone took their seats at the conference table. Of course, Hamlin claimed the chair Cassidy had moved toward first. Hamlin, with his damn suspenders and double Windsor knots, like he was some old-world grandfather and not a 32-year-old dickhead from New Jersey. Cassidy was left with no choice but to sit directly across from Ms. Daniels as they negotiated their deal, section by section. It wasn't just her looks, Cassidy decided. Lots of girls were beautiful. Plenty had brightened a boardroom before. Sure, her golden hair fell from her bun in perfect wisps in front of her eyes, and her legs stretched as far as Cassidy's eye could see. But in fact, her suit was entirely rumpled, and her hair, though sexy and adorable, falling onto her face like that, was doubtfully intended to do so. There was an overall unsettledness about her that Cassidy couldn't quite put her finger on, a scattered energy that she seemed to be fighting to contain. And that accent. It was slight, but added an unmistakable sweetness to all her vowels. A preciousness that didn't at all match up to the sleek sophistication she was trying to project. Cassidy detected that she wasn't wearing a wedding ring, which meant she was single, or as good as single, and she looked young, probably only a year or two out of law school.
Miss Price?
Shit.
Yes, I think Falcon could agree to that.
Cassidy glanced at her notes, hoping they weren't on the page where she had drawn a big circle and written, "Don't agree to this." When she looked back up, Katie Daniels was smiling, triumphant on winning this point. And there was that brightness again. When they broke for the night, Cassidy waited for Katie Daniels to exit the conference room before she did. Then, briefcase in hand, Cassidy bolted down the stairs in order to already be in the main floor lobby when Katie emerged from the elevator. Sunglasses at the ready, Cassidy trailed a safe distance behind Katie and followed her out of the building. Just outside, Katie stopped, so Cassidy stopped. Katie took out her phone, and Cassidy ducked behind a conveniently located modern art sculpture. Cassidy couldn't say for sure why she was semi-stalking her opposing counsel, other than that she was intrigued by her. She had the urge to watch Katie while Katie felt unobserved. Not in a creepy way, though, come to think of it, it was beginning to feel a little creepy. Katie appeared to be at a loss, like her plans had just gotten canceled. Her shoulders were slumped beneath her sharp, all-business suit jacket, and when she stopped looking at her phone like it was some foreign object that had just appeared in her hand, she simply stared into space. Cassidy considered ambling over and bumping into Katie by accident, saying her plans had just gotten canceled, and was there any chance that Katie might want to join her for a bite to eat? But before Cassidy could do something so pathetic and professionally dicey, Katie was off, some decision made, perhaps a new plan secured. Accepting defeat, Cassidy hailed a cab with one hand and texted Gina with the other. Out of work, heading home to change. Dinner before the Met?
You buying?
Gina immediately wrote back. Always.
You gonna make me eat sushi again?
Cassidy smiled. When was the last time you ate something green?
Dunno, day before yesterday, I think. Unless you count the apple Sour Patch Kids I had for lunch.
We're going for sushi. An hour later, Cassidy was sitting across from Gina, watching her pound down a plate of chicken teriyaki and ignore the seaweed salad and broccoli ohitashi she'd ordered for her. Gina was the closest Cassidy had to a best friend. Even though Gina was only 25 and had grown up in an environment as different from hers as possible, she'd felt an automatic connection to Gina when they first met at Metropolis 2 years ago. At the time, Gina had been new to the city, new to the bar, and Cassidy noticed her pilfering half-finished drinks that people left unattended. She was a scrappy-looking thing, knit beanie on her little peanut head, baggy jeans hanging off her ass, sneakers torn to high hell, and Cassidy thought Gina might be homeless. As an experiment, Cassidy ordered a gin and tonic, took a sip, then left it on the bar. From a few feet away, she watched the kid catch sight of the drink and casually mosey up to it. Right when Gina had the gin and tonic in hand, Cassidy approached. "Hi," was all Cassidy said, but Gina startled.
"Aw, shit. This your drink?"
Her accent was thick and southern.
"I think I mistook it for mine."
"No, that's yours," Cassidy said. Gina hesitated, like she was deciding whether she should bolt. Cassidy put out her hand. "I'm Cassidy."
"I know who you are," Gina said. "Read all about you on the bathroom wall. You some kind of predator?"
Gina looked up at her square in the eyes.
"You set a trap to catch me with this drink? You want to fuck me, you could just ask, but I'll tell you right now you're not my type."
It was in that moment that Gina won Cassidy over, and they'd been inseparable ever since. It turned out Gina wasn't homeless, but she was a former teenage runaway out of rural Mississippi with fuckheads for parents, so Cassidy did what she could to help the kid out. She kept an eye on her, made sure she ate, had her rent paid, and went to the doctor when she was sick. In return, Gina was loyal. Cassidy trusted her as much as she could trust anyone.
"Sure it's safe for you to hit up the Met tonight after all the drama this weekend?"
Gina asked now, without looking up from her teriyaki.
"What if you know who shows?"
Cassidy shrugged. "I'm not concerned."
"You two need to bury the hatchet already. Just go back to being friends."
"There's nothing to bury."
Cassidy sipped her green tea. "Remind me to never get on your bad side," Gina said. "The way you cut people off is goddamn scary."
"Don't ever wrong me and you won't have to worry about it."
"You need therapy, see? I'm not even kidding."
"Eat your broccoli," Cassidy said. She got a kick out of taking care of Gina. It made her feel useful, and Gina's messed up home life had struck a nerve. Cassidy knew well the shame and self-reproach that came with having lukewarm parents. Many of their friends did. This was something Cassidy had figured out early on as she got to know the others at the Met. So many of them had fled people or places that hadn't embraced them. But by some magic trick, they all found their way here, to the city, to the bar, where they discovered one another, and suddenly felt better about themselves. Beneath all the lesbian drama, that's what Metropolis was really about. Finding your people and making them your family.
After dinner, it was still on the early side to hit up the Met, so Cassidy and Gina pre-gamed at the Up and Up, a cocktail bar on McDougal that served Cassidy's favorite gin and tonic in the city. By the time they exited two drinks later to the fresh September air, Cassidy was loose and energized. The stress from her day a distant memory. The last person she expected to pass before her eyes was Katie Daniels. She nearly tripped over her own Chelsea boots.
Whoa, hold up.
Cassidy grabbed Gina by the hood of her sweatshirt. It was definitely her. Katie Daniels, looking confused and out of sorts, just like she had outside the Falcon building earlier that day.
What's up? Gina said. Who'd you see that we're avoiding?
I know her.
Cassidy nodded toward Katie, who was wearing a sexy black dress and had her blonde hair free from its uptight bun.
The chick that looks like she got lost on the way to auditions for America's Next Top Model?
Gina snorted.
Uh-oh.
Be quiet.
Cassidy stepped forward. Chapter 3 Katie's plan was to sit at the bar and wait for someone to hit on her. Even if it was only the bartender, it would provide just the ego boost she needed to get through the night. Walking along McDougal, the first hint of September chill hit her shoulders, and she reveled in the sensation. Now, where was that wine bar again? Had she missed it? She could have sworn it was right here. She just pulled out her phone to try Googling it when she heard,
"Hope you're not checking your work email."
That voice, that startling female baritone. Katie turned around, expecting the suit, the shiny Oxfords, the words Falcon cannot agree to that. But it wasn't her. Or wait, it was her. But she looked different somehow. More relaxed and rugged in a casual button-down, dark jeans and leather boots, which appeared to be men's boots. She was with a friend, an adorable little creature with tattoos and a tiny faux hawk that cut across the top of her, or his, head like a mini shark fin.
"Cassidy Price," Katie said.
"You remember me?"
Cassidy gave Katie a cocky smile. "How could I not?" Katie wanted to say, but she kept her mouth shut.
"You look good,"
Cassidy said, which Katie found wildly inappropriate.
"You must be going someplace special."
"I thought I was, but I think it's gone."
"You talking about the wine bar used to be here?"
the little shark said in an accent that was more Mississippi than a mud pie.
"It's that luxury soap store now. They got soap in there that looks so much like a cupcake, I once snuck a lick just to make sure."
"Huh,"
Katie said.
"Name's Gina."
Sharky put out her hand. Katie returned the handshake, trying to mind her manners in spite of Cassidy's doing the whole aggressive eye contact thing she'd pulled on Katie all day long.
"Were you meeting someone?"
Cassidy asked. Katie knew the correct answer was yes, but why should she lie? There was nothing wrong with enjoying some alone time on a Tuesday night.
"I just thought a nice glass of Cabernet would do me good," Katie said in the voice of her chicest self. "After a difficult day at work."
Cassidy let out a measured laugh.
"Well, there's certainly no Cabernet to be found there."
She pointed to the iridescent storefront.
"Only soap you may confuse for dessert."
Katie forced a smile. Could this moment get any more awkward?
"Do you want to come out with us?"
Cassidy asked.
Yup, this could get more awkward.
"Oh, no, thanks, but I can't," Katie said.
Cassidy maintained eye contact.
"Why not?"
"Because I can't."
Katie matched her forcefulness level to Cassidy's.
"You scared?"
Gina said. Of course Katie was scared. These were not her people. Would it be a gay bar they would take her to? It had to be, right?
The closest Katie had ever come to stepping foot into a gay bar was the time she accidentally went for lunch at that restaurant where all the waitresses were drag queens.
"Come out for one drink," Cassidy said. "On me. I feel like I owe you that much after giving you hell all morning."
"That's nice of you, but totally not necessary," Katie said, trying to keep this professional.
"Come on," Cassidy insisted. "Look at you. You're all dressed up. You look like you could use a little fun tonight."
Fun. Now that was something Katie hadn't experienced in its purest form in a very long time. Paul Michael had recently taken her to a gallery called Fun with a PH, but that wasn't quite the same thing. Still, though.
"Maybe some other time," Katie said. "Tonight I need some quiet time alone."
Cassidy looked down at her boots. "Okay, then," she said. "Nice seeing you. Till tomorrow, I guess."
"Later, Gator,"
Gina said. They walked away, and Katie tried to figure out her next move. She looked at her phone, and panic ensued. She didn't actually want to be alone tonight. Fun was what she really needed. Just plain fun that was free of irony and didn't involve getting hit on by some bartender or some other random dude. It was too soon for that. She needed fun without sexual pressure. Maybe even fun without men. And what was the worst that could happen?
"Hey!"
Katie called out to them.
"Hey, wait up!"
They turned around simultaneously.
"One drink," she said. "Why not?"
Cassidy gave Gina a nudge in the arm, as if to say, "I told you so." Catching up to them, Katie asked,
"Where are we going?"
"The Met,"
Cassidy said.
"The museum?"
That brought a cackle out of Gina.
"Metropolis," she said. "It's a bar."
"Well, that sounds generic enough," Katie said, somewhat relieved.
"What were you expecting?"
Gina asked.
"The Clit Club? Pantyhose?"
Cassidy cracked up then, the first time Katie had ever heard a genuine laugh out of her, which she assumed meant Gina was messing with her.
"Tonight's Metropolis's Tuesday night party," Cassidy said. "It's called Cunt Power."
"Oh," Katie said, unsure if she was messing with her now. The moment Katie stepped into Metropolis, the Met, she noticed the soles of her Dior heels were sticking to the floor. She hadn't experienced a sticky barroom floor in years, and she hadn't missed it. The second thing she noticed was everyone else noticing her. Katie filed in just behind Cassidy, and she could almost hear the record scratch as everyone's attention turned toward them. Was that her imagination? First sight of the place was not what she was expecting. She thought it would be a little frightening and intimidating, that the faces turning to her might look downright angry, hard in the eyes, tight around the mouth. Muscle shirts, military buzz cuts, that sort of thing. But it wasn't like that at all. Plenty of these women looked like women. She spied a few other dresses in the crowd, and the ones who didn't look like women looked like boys, not men. It was hard to be intimidated by a 5'2" college kid wearing a flannel from Gap Kids. The room was dimly lit, painted red. It smelled a little bit like cheese, but there was no cheese in sight. To the left of the entrance was the bar, lined with vinyl stools, where girls of all sizes and colors were crowding in on one another, waving cash at the bartender, who had a pink streak in her hair. Some of these girls had choppy, asymmetrical haircuts and pierced noses. Some were in short shorts with tube socks pulled up to their knees. Many of them had forgotten to put on a bra before leaving the house. The girls who looked like boys wore skinny neckties or faded T-shirts with jeans that hung low off their hips. A few of them reminded Katie of Justin Bieber before he grew muscles.
"I think I'm a little overdressed for this place,"
Katie said to Cassidy over the music, which she was pretty sure was Joan Jett circa 1981.
"You're dressed just right," Cassidy said.
Trust me.
Yeah, said Gina. There's a scarcity of femmes around here, in case you haven't noticed.
I don't even really know what that means, Katie said. But I sense you aren't talking about film noir.
Girly girls, Gina said. Lipstick lesbians.
I'm not a femme, Katie said.
You sure as hell ain't butch, Gina replied.
No, Katie said. Of course not. She wanted to elaborate further, to explain how she was neither, that she was just a normal, regular girl, and that coming here was purely circumstantial. But before she had the chance, Cassidy took her by the hand and led her through the crowd toward the condensed group jostling for the bartender's attention.
What can I get you to drink?
Cassidy asked. Katie hesitated, and Cassidy added,
You don't want the Cabernet. Trust me.
Wild turkey, then, she said. Neat.
Cassidy blinked her long, dark eyelashes at Katie, quiet for a second. Then she said, Huh.
What does huh mean?
Nothing.
What? Were you expecting me to order something a little more weak?
No, Cassidy said. A little more pink.
Fuck off.
Whoa.
Gina smacked Cassidy on the back.
That came even sooner in the night than I expected.
Really? Katie peered down at Gina, gripping her hands to her hips. Because I've been wanting to tell her to fuck off since around 9:30 this morning. It occurred to Katie then that she'd already had a good amount of wild turkey at her apartment, or she wouldn't have come out and said something so rudely honest. One more drink was definitely all she could handle. Gina did an about-face.
I'm gonna go get on the pool table list.
Katie went to follow behind her, but Gina zipped through the crowd so fast she immediately lost track of her. So instead, Katie stayed put, waiting for Cassidy to wrangle their drinks. Katie tried to look like she belonged in the space she was occupying, to not stare at anyone, but she'd never experienced a place like this before. Just off to her right, two girls were making out so aggressively, she was afraid one of them might lose a tongue. They were both wearing blue hoodies and Converse sneakers, and both had short, bleached blonde hair. In fact, they could have passed for twin, gender-neutral siblings if Katie hadn't known better. This baffled her, because if this world was supposedly made up of femmes and butches, what were these two? And was this sort of hooking up with your own doppelganger frowned upon or championed? While Katie was pondering this, a woman approached her. She herself didn't blend. She was older than the mostly 20-something crowd by a solid decade, and style-wise was dressed more for, say, hitting up a golf tournament than a night of cruising for girls. She was wearing a black fleece jacket that was zipped all the way up, and pleated khaki shorts that hit just above her knees. She might have had a perm. Katie couldn't really tell because she was also wearing a white ball cap with mirrored Oakley sunglasses resting on top of the cap's bill.
Can I buy you a drink? The woman asked.
Oh, God.
Thanks, but my friend is getting me one.
Katie pointed toward the bar, hoping to divert this person's attention, but instead she continued staring directly into Katie's eyes.
You're new here, aren't you? She said. You must be, because if you'd been here before, I'd remember.
This was all too much. Katie needed to either take a breath or vomit.
Excuse me,
Katie said, and then disappeared herself into the crowd, searching for the restroom. It was all the way in the back, in a dark corner, of course. Katie assumed it was unisex because the signage on the door was a chalk drawing of a stick figure with very big hair, giant boobs, and an equally giant penis. She knocked pointlessly, checked to make sure the pro golfer hadn't followed her, and then pushed open the door using only her knuckles. Inside were two stalls, one with a door and one...
Oh, pardon me, she said.
Two women were going at it inside the doorless stall, in a way Katie thought only happened on X-Tube. One of them had her back to Katie, a harmless enough white T-shirt and blue jeans, but the other one was all skin and leg meat.
Her thigh was flexibly suspended over the T-shirted one's shoulder. They didn't acknowledge Katie, and rather than repeat her apology for the intrusion, she opted for the stall with a door. To her horror, though, the door had no lock. Also, one look at the toilet paper roll, and it was obvious to Katie that it had previously fallen into the toilet and been fished out. But she really did have to pee, so she did her best to not touch anything, and tried to keep calm by reading the walls. There, she found the usual hearts and arrows. Slut whore was here. MJB gives great head. I hate that bitch. Fuck you, ho. You have HPV. Boy, had this night taken a turn. If that wine bar had simply been where it was supposed to be, Katie would probably have had the bartender's phone number by now, and she'd have been using a restroom with one of those bamboo air diffusers that made everything smell like citrus. Instead, she was here drip-drying on account of the toilet paper situation, certain she was about to contract a staph infection. To the left of the missing door lock, Katie noticed a numbered list of names in hot pink block letters. Best fucks list. Cassidy was listed at number 2, beneath a girl named Dana. But then someone had crossed out Dana's name and written Cassidy on top, which then prompted a few others to weigh in. Biggest slut. Total playa. Someone else had written, totes worth it, though. So it appeared that Cassidy Price was something of a cad. Hardly the hero Katie had witnessed earlier in the boardroom. She had to wonder, then, if Cassidy's eagerness to get her to join them tonight was more than a simple gesture of goodwill. Did the total playa think she could get her into bed? And, oh Christ, one of the young women in the stall beside hers was reaching orgasm, she was pretty sure. Katie had to get the hell out of here. She had to chug that drink waiting for her without touching her lips to the glass, if possible, and then get herself back home to her couch. No, even before the couch, she would take a shower. A long, hot, steaming, cleansing shower. Katie exited the bathroom, rubbing her palms with the peach-scented hand sanitizer she kept in her purse. "Check out Miss Priss over here," someone called out, followed by a round of mean female laughter. "This one's got to be one of Cassidy's," someone else said. Katie frantically searched the room and caught sight of Gina's shark fin at the pool table. She was chalking up a cue. Then Katie saw Cassidy carrying their drinks from the bar toward the two empty stools near the corner of the pool table. She caught Katie's eye and nodded at the stools with her chin. When Katie reached her, Cassidy handed her one of the glasses, and Katie immediately swallowed down a healthy sip. Cassidy settled onto the red leatherette stool beside hers like it was her favorite living room recliner. She stretched her long legs out in front of her and crossed her boots at the ankles. "So what do you think?" she asked. "Have you ever been to a place like this before?"
"I've been to dives way worse than this," Katie said. "You should see my hometown."
"Not what I meant."
Cassidy was smiling, so Katie smiled, and while smiling, she said, "Just to be clear, you know I'm straight, right?" Cassidy laughed, then folded her arms over the chest of her chambray button-down, which was tailored as smartly as her work shirt had been, but was untucked for a more casual effect.
"That's why I thought this might be your first dyke bar," Cassidy said.
"Oh, it is," Katie replied matter-of-factly.
"So, then, what do you think?"
Katie scanned the space, hoping not to lock eyes with the pro golfer or those bitches who'd laughed at her because of her sanitizer.
"No offense," Katie said, "but aren't there any nicer lesbian bars?"
"Not really."
Cassidy uncrossed her ankles.
"Well, there are some, but they're not the Met."
Gina looked up over her pool cue.
"That's a lie. There's plenty of fancy places with clean glasses and girls Cassidy's own age, but she prefers them young and dirty."
"Speaks highly of you," Katie said. Cassidy shrugged, unapologetic. "How old are you?"
Katie asked. Probably about the same age as you.
I'm 28,
Katie said. Me too.
She's 30,
Gina called out, just before sinking 3 balls with 1 shot. You came on a good night. Cassidy pretended she hadn't just been caught lying about her age. You're going to see all our best Celestians. She pointed with her bourbon glass. See that girl over there? You recognize her? The woman Cassidy had gestured toward was black with a shaved head and had the most beautiful smile Katie had ever seen on anyone. That's Sabrina Weil, Cassidy said. She's a model. There's a giant billboard of her in her underwear in Times Square right now. And the girl standing next to her, that's Chef Becky. Have you seen that cooking show, Knife Fight? Becky was on season 3, but she lost. Gina stood up straight at the sound of Chef Becky's name, planting her pool cue hard at her side.
Becky used to be a vegan. She's got a goddamn vegan tattoo across her stomach, right here.
She indicated her own belly.
Old English letters, V-E-G-A-N. And now she's famous for being a nose-to-tail butcher. One of these days I'm going to call the TV station and tell them about that tattoo.
Cassidy whispered an explanation into Katie's ear. Gina got her little heart butchered by the butcher once upon a time. My ex was a vegan, Katie said, in an effort at consolation that came out a few decibels too loud. Gina, about to line up her next shot, paused.
So that means you're single then?
Katie pretended not to hear her and was quickly bailed out.
Who's your friend, Cassidy?
The chef herself approached their corner.
Katie Daniels, Cassidy said. Meet Chef Becky.
Becky was on the short side, adorably chubby in the exact way you want a chef to be, and she was wearing a purple bandana around her head. She reached for Katie's hand, lifted it to her lips, and kissed it.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance. What are you drinking, honey?
She picked up Katie's empty glass and sniffed it. Then she lifted her arm and called out to the bartender with a pink stripe in her hair.
Dahlia! A round of whiskey shots over here!
Wow. Katie said. You have a very impressive sense of smell.
Oh, baby, Becky said. You have no idea.
Cassidy gave Katie's elbow a little tug to pull her back from Becky's forward lean. Quick to notice this move, Becky narrowed her eyes at Cassidy.
Oh, I see how it is. She's officially one of yours.
I'm nobody's, Katie shot back. And actually, I think I should probably get going.
What? No, Becky said. We've only just met.
We have an early morning, Katie said to Cassidy.
That's true, Cassidy said. We do.
Except just then their shots arrived. Becky took one for herself and handed one to Katie.
Come on, she said. Stick around for a bit.
The second Katie took that shot glass in hand, she knew if she drank it, she would be a goner. But down the hatch it went. Her brain fuzzed and the light dimmed, and she was feeling pretty friggin' good then. Soon an Asian girl with spiky hair and aggressive green eyeshadow, whose name Katie didn't catch, had her hand on Katie's back and was asking if she lived around here. She was saying something about the girl party she threw on the first Friday of every month, and drink tickets. Something about how she would give Katie free drink tickets. Then the model Cassidy had pointed out earlier crowded into their corner as well. Close up, her skin looked so soft and smooth, she could have easily done commercials for Dove soap. All the while, Cassidy stayed put at Katie's side, bookending her with whoever this spiky-haired stranger was rubbing her back.
You like to eat? Chef Becky asked. You eat meat? She eats meat, Cassidy answered for her. Only meat.
The model threw back her beautiful head and laughed, and Katie was sure the whole bar brightened.
We'll see about that, she said.
Then she picked up Katie's empty glass.
What are you drinking? Wild turkey!
Chef Becky slammed her hand down on the edge of the pool table. She drinks wild turkey, because she is my kind of girl.
Hey, Chef, Cassidy said, take it down a notch.
What? Becky adjusted her bandana like she was gussying up for a fight.
You think just because you bring him, you own him? Well, I think this young lady is free-roaming, just like the chickens on my sustainable farm upstate. Am I right, Katie?
Katie nodded in agreement, because how could she not? Becky raised her glass.
She's meant to run wild!
The others raised their glasses in accord. Katie sort of couldn't believe any of what was happening. There was literally a circle of women around her, and every single one of them was hitting on her. They were practically fighting over her. And these were the Celesbians. They must have been like the elite of their world. Katie found herself giggling, electrified by the attention. If this were a group of men, she might have felt overwhelmed, threatened even. If it were just one man crowding her with such a blatant attempt at seduction, she would have gotten the hell out of there faster than you could say rape whistle. But this felt harmless rather than predatory. And even the way Cassidy had positioned herself at Katie's side, like her own personal bodyguard, struck Katie as amusing. At some point, they all just started calling Katie Wild Turkey. Instead of, what are you drinking, it became, Wild Turkey, you ready for another? The Asian girl with the spiky hair had worked her arm all the way around Katie's torso and was holding her so close she could smell her cologne. Katie was way taller than she was, definitely stronger, and could have easily pulled away. But the closeness felt good, safe somehow. Chef Becky went on about the restaurant she was opening in Dumbo.
I am talking whole hog. Nothing will go to waste. Ears, tail, we'll serve old Porky's head right there on a bed of mustard greens.
The model, whatever her name was more on the quiet side. She let her million-dollar smile do most of her bragging for her. But then her girlfriend showed up, and she stopped smiling so much and sulked away into the crowd. Becky jumped at the opening of having one less competitor.
What do you say you and me go out back for some fresh air?
She asked. There's a backyard here? Katie asked.
Nope.
Cassidy grabbed Katie by the hand. She pulled her free from the spiky-haired stranger's hold, and Becky's forward lean, and escorted her through the crowd to the other end of the bar.
Is somebody jealous of all the attention I'm getting? Katie said.
But Cassidy ignored her. Katie thought Cassidy might be taking her to the backyard herself, but instead they stopped at a game machine called Mega Touch that looked like something out of the 80s movie, Big. Cassidy shoved a dollar into the machine, and its screen came to light. She chose a game called Erotic Photo Hunt, which was simple enough to follow. It was basically the same game as the one in the back of the tabloids, except you had to find the differences between two nearly identical pictures of scantily clad women. The women were posed explicitly in otherwise innocent places, like backyard barbecues and holiday-themed dining rooms.
I don't get jealous, Cassidy said,
in a delayed response to Katie's allegation. She tapped at the screen's dissimilar flower pots and areolas.
I assumed I was doing you a favor.
Oh, please, Katie said. It's not like I would actually...
Hey, Dahlia,
Cassidy said, cutting Katie off, calling out over her shoulder.
Could you send over a glass of water? A big one. Maybe a pitcher.
It's cute that you're worried about me, Katie said, but I'm fine. I'm having a blast. I'm so happy you brought me here.
Glad to hear it. Cassidy said, but it is getting late. Probably a good idea to start winding down.
Why did you bring me here? Katie asked.
Cassidy turned from the screen for a moment to look at Katie straight on. Her features were bathed in the machine's erotic hot pink glow.
I'm not sure what you're asking me. You were alone. It was the polite thing to do.
Do you really have such good manners?
Katie got too close to the machine and accidentally brushed up against a spot that made Cassidy lose the game.
Probably not as good as yours.
Cassidy slipped another dollar into the machine and began again.
Where'd you grow up? Somewhere in the South?
Kentucky,
Katie said, and then hiccuped.
That explains your accent.
I don't have an accent.
You sure do, wild turkey, and it gets heavier with every drink.
Well, so do you, Katie said. You have the accent of New York coastal elitism. Let me guess, you were born and raised in Manhattan, private schooled. Your parents are probably both doctors.
Cassidy cracked a half smile, but said nothing.
I'm right, aren't I?
No, Cassidy said. Only my father is a doctor. My mother's an artist.
Katie lost it then.
Ha! I knew it! Wait, what kind of artist? Does she, like, throw paint or sit in public and stare?
Cassidy turned away from her game and looked down at the filthy floor.
She's really into traffic cones right now, like putting eyes on them.
Oh my God, I totally know her work.
Katie leaned all the way against the Megatouch machine now.
My ex-fiancé was a curator, so I know all about that crap.
Cassidy eyed Katie cautiously.
What happened?
He dumped me for my best friend, like 3 days ago.
I mean, how did you, Katie the wild turkey from Kentucky, end up a corporate lawyer engaged to a New York curator?
Exactly, Katie said, just as Dahlia appeared with their water.
Katie accepted the glass from Dahlia and then handed it off to Cassidy.
I don't want this. Let's do another shot instead.
Absolutely not, Cassidy said.
The next thing Katie remembered was doing another shot, and then dancing. Which was interesting because there wasn't a dance floor at Metropolis. There was, however, Pat Benatar, or something equally awesome and ridiculous, ringing in her ears. The rest was a blur of hands and hair and perfumed hot skin and sweat. At some point, Katie fell down, and someone, possibly Dahlia, said, "Get this drunk-ass bitch out of here." Then it was Cassidy's arms. A cab. "Where do you live?" Katie recited her address, but it was the wrong address. The one to Paul Michael's Soho condo. So she course-corrected them to the right address, but was crying, then sobbing. "I don't even know where I live anymore." Katie remembered the front door to her apartment. Cassidy losing her patience. "Which key, Katie? Which key is it?"
I don't know.
Finally, they were inside Katie's apartment, the right one in the West Village, with all the cardboard moving boxes strewn about. Off with her shoes and maybe her dress? It was hazy what happened next, but Katie distinctly remembered how sweetly Cassidy cared for her, and how she carted Katie to the bathroom, fortuitous on her part, because they made it to the toilet just in time. Katie couldn't remember anything after that.
Chapter 4
Cassidy helped Katie into her building and up the 4 flights of stairs to her apartment, because the likelihood of her wiping out and cracking her face open on the stairwell was much too great. She'd planned to turn right around and make her escape the moment Katie was safely inside. But curiosity took over when she laid eyes on the place. She followed Katie into the foul-smelling living room, stepping over cardboard boxes and empty food containers. A plastic bag that doubled for a trash can overflowed with Kleenex. Cassidy remembered then about the ex-fiancé, and it all started to make sense. This apartment was a disaster. Katie was a disaster, because she was in pain.
"Do you need anything?" Cassidy asked. "Before I go."
Katie shimmied off her dress and stepped out of it.
Cassidy averted her eyes, but it was too late. She'd already seen Katie's silky black bra and underwear.
"Please don't go."
Katie came closer, wrapped her arms around Cassidy's neck.
I'm all alone.
In spite of herself, Cassidy felt something, a weakening of her defenses now that Katie's sadness was so evident.
You're not alone.
She made no effort to remove Katie's forearms from where they were.